to get out the meaning. And this is being done by stochastic recognizer, and this recognizer is by no means perfect. We are addressing the problem that in the training you train the stochastic recognizer on some type of a data, but during a test the data may come from the other environment and the classifier may not work. So the question is now, can we tell that the recognizer may have problems, and the recognizer then may announce that it cannot deal with the problem, or going even a little bit further, can we improve the performance of the recognizer by unsupervised adaptation? So basically we are asking, how good is the estimate without knowing what the correct answer is, just looking at the output of the classifier or inside the classifier. The classifiers which we are now dominating the speech recognition research are typically discriminative, non-generative classifiers, so-called neural networks or deep neural networks, which try to estimate posterior probabilities of the speech sounds out of the segments of the speech. Here we have an example of one of these outputs, and we'll see it over and over again, but I just wanted you to get used to it slowly. Here we have time running, I apologize the time axis is not marked. Here we have the different speech sounds, in this case context-independent phonemes, but they can be anything else which can form the words. And here in the Z direction we have a posterior probability of the phoneme at a given time. So you can see how these black marks change, because they represent the different speech sounds as we go in time. And as I said, we don't know the correct answer, but we see such a classifier and we would like to know, is this output good or is this output bad? So our classifiers look in following way. We start with the speech spectrum. Actually, this is our input. We divide the spectrum in number of frequency bands. From each spectrum, we are classifying a speech sounds, so we get a different views of the speech signal here, or five different views. And then we concatenate posteriors from a particular combination of these outputs. So here what we are getting out after diffusing a neural network, we are getting posterior probabilities of speech sounds given the input, which may not cover the whole frequency band. So we are, in this way, we are generating actually 31 different classifiers, because out of five subband classifiers, you can generate 2 in the fifth minus 1 combinations. DNNs here are typically, in a lot of our work, are 4 hidden layer networks, which estimate the context-independent probabilities of the states of the HMM, which are then fused into posterior probabilities of speech sounds. And then the fusing classifier is done also by 4 hidden layer input, and in this case, posteriors of context-independent phonemes. Outputs are estimates of context-independent phonemes. We train this classifier on 2 different training conditions. One is a clean speech, one in the speech corrupted by various levels of noise. So subway, we use the subway noise. Oh, sorry, other noise. So where can we get the information how good the estimate is? Either from the output of the classifier, a lot of our work works on that, as you will see from the presentations. We can look also inside the classifier, but we can also look at overall likelihood of the best path, which is being found by using the output of the classifier, and we will see that all of these approaches have a certain chance for success. And we are evaluating our results by knowing at the end what the actually correct output is. So we do know what the recognition rate is on a given classifier just for the purpose of evaluation. So we can correlate our measures, which we are developing here in this workshop, either by errors in recognition of the sequence of the phonemes, or we can look at how the ideal posteriorgram, which would come from the labels, which would look like, and comparing the posteriorgram which we are deriving from our estimators with the ideal output, or we are also comparing with posteriors which are estimated from the data which are as close as possible to our training data, where we assume that the output is as close as possible to the ability to the ideal output. And another evaluation criterion which we see towards the end of the talk is also we are trying to pick up out of the number of streams which are having at our disposal, 31 streams, the best streams, so that we are showing how our final accuracy is improving. That is all what I wanted to say by the introduction. I tried to somehow bring you into the problem. I don't know how well I succeeded, but from now on we can go on, and I think Rich will be the next one.
Yeah. Okay. As it says, my name is Richard Stern. I'm here from Carnegie Mellon, and I'm only going to spend a few minutes talking about the five analysis channels, the noise sources, and also I'm only going to touch on briefly, because that will be discussed in greater detail later, some of the methods that we use to compare the figures of merit to the ground truth. So you heard Hynek talk in his presentation about the fact that we have five parallel channels, DNNs working on each channel. These are the frequency responses, or the weighting functions, if you want to think of them that way, in each of the channels. You can see the highest frequency channel has a center frequency really a bit below 3 kilohertz. And the top frequency is around 5 kilohertz. If we look at the same plot in with the magnitude in decibels, they look even more kind of overlapping in frequency. It's just a replot, the same thing. And once again, if we look on log-log scales, you can see that the curves really do overlap quite a bit. Frequency bands get wider as we go up in center frequency. That was intended to roughly mimic various characteristics of the auditory system, as some of you may have heard me comment on earlier in this in the month. Now, for training and testing conditions, the team at Johns Hopkins, in consultation with the rest of us, chose a variety of training and testing. And keep in mind that the purpose of the workshop is to understand the extent to which we can infer the characteristics of signals when we're operating outside of the realm that the system was trained in, and kind of do the right thing in terms of knowing what to do and how to compensate for that. So for training, we have two different kinds of training, which you'll hear about. One is simply clean speech without anything added to it. And the second is speech that has been artificially degraded by adding subway noise, noise at subway stations, at an SNR 5 dB. In addition to that, there are a couple of other noise conditions that are used in some of the various testing conditions. Speech babble with an SNR of 15 dB, a noise from recorded from various factories and restaurants at 10 dB, noise from cars and 5 dB, and exhibition noise is the noise that you'd hear at your random poster session at a big meeting, also added at 5 dB. Now, let's take a look at some of the spectra. I'm not going to play these right now. If you're curious, you can hear them over the break. But the subway noise is you're sitting on the platform and two cars go by, and you can see it changes a little bit over time. The exhibition noise, as I indicated before, is very broad band and also at a fairly low SNR. Nevertheless, one of the current concerns that we realized that we had after being here for about 10 days or so was that if you're sitting in one of these analysis channels, all of the noise is a very broad band relative to the width of the channel. And so we were concerned that those noises may not be sufficiently spectrally focused to push us toward ignoring some channels and emphasizing others. So for that reason, a little bit farther in, we made a small mid-course correction and generated some filters that were designed to give us noise that was only in band 2 and only in band 4. The ideal filter shapes were realized by those red curves that you can see, and there's some comment about how the criterion, which was arbitrary, was chosen. And this is what those noise look like, and those noises look like in terms of the spectral content. And they were derived by passing the exhibition noise through that. And those signals were degraded, or those channels were degraded at 0 dB signal to noise ratio. So it really does a pretty effective job of knocking out channel 2 and band 2 and band 4, and under certain circumstances, some of the stuff around it too. So those are the noise conditions that you'll be hearing about as the discussions progress. Now, in addition to that, we evaluate the quality of the streams in a couple of different ways. Anjali Menon and Naomi Feldman are going to be talking more about that. Suffice it to say that we recognize the Timit network utterances using neural net classifiers, as you heard, that give phonemic probabilities. And we compare the quality of those outputs in several ways. One of the things we can do is use that second, what do you call it, fusing neural network that actually gives us probabilities at the end, and use those probabilities as the things that we compare to the manually labeled Timit sentences. Jack Gottfried can tell you about his participation in Timit back in the Pleistocene era, during the break perhaps. And the other thing that we also do is we directly compare the posteriograms to ideal posteriograms. Again, this will be discussed later. This is on the right, one of the posteriograms similar to the ones that Hennig described in more detail earlier. This is an idealized posteriogram based on representation of the actual ground truth. We can cross-correlate the two, which gives us a measure of the average probability of the a posteriori probability of the hypothesized sentence, or we can look at the average log probability, which is based on KL divergence. So with that, let's move on to our next speaker, which is Naomi Feldman from Maryland.
Okay, so I'm going to be talking about predicting the phoneme error rate. That is, our basic setup here is that we have a number of classifiers, 31, all combinations of the five bands that Hennig and Rich introduced, and we'd like to have some measure that can help us predict the phoneme error rate without knowing what the utterance is supposed to be, and without knowing much about the classifier or really much at all about the input data. So essentially, we have posteriograms that come out of each of those classifiers, and Hennig introduced these briefly, but I want to go over them again. So what are the characteristics of posteriograms that we might look to try and predict performance? And so again, here on the x-axis is the different frames, so that's as we go along in time what's happening in the speech signal. The y-axis are the different phonemes, so it can be any one of 39 possible phonemes. And then the darkness of the posteriogram just indicates the probability of that phoneme being at that time slice. And so you can see that as the posteriogram goes on, you sort of switch between these different phonemes. Starting very simply, one thing that we could look at is just a single time slice of this posteriogram. So we could evaluate things at a single frame. Another thing that we could do is we could look at a couple of different time slices on this posteriogram and compare them. And so how different frames relate to each other within a posteriogram might give us information about how good that posteriogram is. And the third thing we could do is actually assign labels based on what the posteriogram says, assign labels to every frame, and somehow evaluate those labels. And then there's actually a fourth possibility, which I won't be saying anything about, but with Lukasz and Karel will be speaking about later, which is if you actually have the classifier and can look inside the classifier, you might be able to use some of that as a predictor. So from the first three categories, I'll just be talking about a few basic predictors and introducing them to lay the groundwork for what the students will be presenting later on. So the first just looks at a single frame, and this is, I guess, if you have a posterior gram, which is a probability distribution over phones, one of the first things that one might think of. And that is just looking at the entropy of the distribution over phones. And so in this case, the classifier is trained to output a one hot vector with a one in for one phoneme and a zero everywhere else. And so the entropy of the distribution should be low, and in this case it's a little bit higher than it should be. And so we can compute the entropy in a single frame. We can average it over an utterance, say, to see how good the posterior gram for that utterance is, and lower would be better for this type of predictor. So that's a single frame. We can also look at two frames within a posterior gram. And here, if you take the frames from far enough apart, you might assume that they should be from different phones, or at least sufficiently probably different, that you might expect those two frames to be different from each other, whereas if there's a lot of noise, they might be similar. And so Hynek had proposed one way of quantifying this in 2012, which is called the M-measure. You just look at the Kale divergence between frames that are a certain distance away. And so during this workshop, Jordan Cohen proposed a second variant of this, which we call M-delta, which tries to separate out which frames are in different versus same phones and compute the relative Kale divergence such that you would like that different phonemes to have higher Kale divergence than frames from the same phoneme. I won't give any more details about that, but Tetsuji will be talking about it soon. And for both of these, higher is better. And then the third type of information that we can use is just to assign labels based on what phoneme is most probable in each frame of the posterior gram. In this case, we can sort of make a language model by giving a label to each sequence of frames that has the same label, so we'll call that a phone, and then we can compute the bigram likelihood on that sequence of phones. So for example, we can do that using a bigram model computed from transcripts or computed from the training data, and in either of these cases, we'd like to have phoneme labels that make sense. If anyone's paying attention, these do not at all. Okay, so I'm just going to be showing you how these predictors do. So all three of these types, and you'll hear several other predictors in student presentations. So this is just some baselines. Essentially, what we're going to want to do is to evaluate how well a predictor gives good performance, where we can define good performance in any way we want. And specifically, what I'd like to tell you about is a correlation with the phoneme error rate. That is, we can compute a correlation between how good the output of the classifier is as measured in many speech applications versus how well our predictor thinks it is, and that way we can tell whether phonemes are good or bad. But you can also think about sort of the overall quality of a posterior gram and not just the right label. And you can also think about using the predictor as sort of putting it into a system and seeing how the system does with this as a predictor inside, and Tetsuji will be talking about that. So this is what one of those correlations looks like. Essentially, these dots all come from a single sentence. This is a test sentence that has some noise corruption, or doesn't, depending on which graph it is. The predictor is on the x-axis. The phoneme error rate is what we want to predict. It's on the y-axis. And essentially, for all of our 31 classifiers, we have a dot. And so the phoneme error rate is low and the entropy is low, then those are good classifiers, and in this case, entropy is correlating reasonably well. So we can compute, we can make one of these graphs for every possible test sentence and look at whether we can pick a predictor, whether our predictor tells us how to pick a classifier. So essentially, for a single input sentence, we'll compute the correlation between the predictor and the phoneme error rate, and then we can average those correlation coefficients across test sentences to get an overall goodness of a predictor. And so this would be good in a situation where, given an input sentence and several classifiers, we need to decide which classifier to use or which classifiers are good and which are bad. Okay, so here are some results. On the x-axis is are four different noise conditions. We had another six that I'm not showing you. They're pretty similar to the clean and exhibition hall noise. So these are trying to distinguish between 31 classifiers trained on clean data, and what the graph is showing you on the y-axis is the correlation with error rate between those 31 classifiers. So we have five different predictors here. Those are the different colors. And so the red is based on a single frame, the blue are based on multiple frames, and the green are based on actually the phone labels that come out of the classifier. And you can see a few things. So first of all of them are doing actually quite similarly. So despite the fact that they look at different parts of the posterior gram, it seems that all of them are picking up information. But you can also see that some conditions, some noise conditions are harder than others. In particular, and we'll come back to this exhibition hall band 4 noise that Rich talked about, where it's a band-limited noise condition, seems to be tough for these predictors to pick up on bad performance. So again, we'll come back to that. So these are just the predictors that I explained. We'll be showing you lots more over the course of this session. We get a very similar pattern trained on subway noise. Here, this exhibition band, hall band 4 noise is, again, very hard to pick up on. Keep that in mind because it's actually not going to lead to bad performance, but students will be looking into what's going on here, Matt in particular, and how we can make it better. All of the predictors are fairly highly correlated with each other. Actually, we haven't been able to get benefits from combining them into a single predictor. Okay, just in case, actually, I think that I will skip this. So just to conclude, essentially, there are several different types of predictors that we can look at to see whether a signal, whether we think a posterior gram is giving us good information or whether we think it's been corrupted such that this classifier is not giving us good information. All of these predictors seem to be giving us the same information, but we do get some differences when looking at some tough noise conditions where, in this case, the predictors that look at the posterior gram but look at multiple frames seem to be giving us some benefit. Some types of noise are more difficult to detect, and we'll be showing you applications, evaluation metrics, and more predictors as this goes on. Thanks. Next is Tetsuji.
Good morning. I'm Tetsuji Oga from Waseda University. In my presentation today, I'd like to talk about an extension of a measure and its applicability to multi-stream ASR system. Okay, here's the background. So a measure provided by Hynek works well as a confidence measure, but seems to depend on phoneme contents. So, you know, phoneme class dependent measure needs a large number of data to estimate itself during runtime. So in order to solve this problem, we extend a measure so as to handle this kind of phoneme dependency. We took two approaches. So first one is this M delta. This is a new M measure. And next is simplification of class definition to improve reliability of M measure. So I'd like to explain briefly about the M measure. So this is the distance between posteriors. Posteriors. Oh, sorry. Posteriors, which is averaged for over an utterance. And we use a symmetric scale divergence for this distance metric. Oh, sorry. So slide a little bit corrupted. A measure draw this kind of curve as a function of delta t, and we observed a measure gets lower and lower under unknown condition. So it means we can pick up the best stream or best system with highest M measure. So we can compute this kind of M measure with several delta t's, for example 10, 15, 20 to 80 frames of delta t. And finally, we can obtain the confidence measure by taking an average of these numbers. Anyway, I want to emphasize that this kind of distance metric, distance between posteriors, are accumulated without any consideration of phoneme contents. So we attempt to estimate, extract, so across class M measure and within class M measure. This, which means a measure of same phoneme classes, a measure of different phoneme classes. We try to estimate these values as a to introduce the phoneme class information to M measure. And finally, we use this M delta as a confidence measure. This figure shows the M distribution of M delta and corresponding phoneme accuracies for several types of noises. You can see that so M delta highly correlate with the phoneme accuracy, right? So how to estimate it? Actually, this concept is coming up from Jordan Cohen. So our assumption is here. So this is the M measure. M measure can be decomposed like this. These probabilities, PWC and PAC, are the probabilities of phonemes at the distance of delta T frames being the same phonemes and different phonemes. And these MWC and MAC are what we want to estimate for each utterance. Okay? So these probabilities can be computed using training data, using exact transcription. And also, we can compute this M measure for each test utterance. Okay? So anyway, we can compute these equations. We can write this equation with several delta t's redundantly, like this. So of course, this equation is not perfect. I mean, this is just an approximation. So by adding this kind of error term and minimizing this least square errors, we can estimate these MAC and MWC using least square method. Anyway, we can estimate MAC and MWC for each sentence. So M delta, it means M delta can be obtained for each sentence. So we try to use this M delta T for confidence measure. In addition to that, we try to use broad phoneme classes instead of 39 phonemes. So the purpose is to increase coverage of classes for each utterance to improve the reliability of M measure. So let's see the result. These numbers are shown by Naomi, but I just want to focus on the difference between M and M delta. This figure shows the correlation between a confidence measure and phoneme accuracy for several types of noises. So this is the noise condition of full band being corrupted. In these cases, specific band 2 and band 4 are corrupted. So you can see, this is the M, this is the M delta. So in this case, higher the better. So you can see that M delta works, and we got a lot large improvement, especially for the specific stream corrupted case. And also, if we use broad phoneme classes, so for the wide band case, it doesn't help, but especially for the narrow band case, we got a further improvement like this. So next, I'd like to organize the result about some kind of applicability of multi-stream ASR with performance monitoring. Let me remind you first of our evaluation criteria. So this is how well can our measures pick up the most reliable processing stream for each utterance. Okay, we have four evaluation items. Oracle is the case of picking up the best stream in terms of the phoneme error rate by hand. This is some kind of extreme goal. This is the case of without performance monitor. This is a baseline. So, and random is the case of picking up stream at random. And finally, this is a case of performance monitor. So I'd like to show the result from these five confidence measures. And this mean square error from deep autoencoder is going to be explained by Harish at the next session. Okay, and also, we have two systems, train on Queen and train on Noisy. So, first one is developed using only Queen data. Okay. And this system developed using the noisy data collected by subway noise with several SNRs. Okay, let's see the result. This figure shows the phoneme error rate for Queen data and for several types of noises. Okay, let's see. This is Oracle. This is baseline. This is at random. And this is the case of using performance monitor. So we can see that multi-stream ASR with performance monitor works even when, even under the full band being corrupted. And for narrow band case, we can get a lot of improvement, large improvement like this. So this is for one system, a train on Queen system. So how about the another system? So we can train on noisy system. In the training on noisy system, training data includes some kind of wide band noise. So in this case, so the system without performance monitor is good enough. But in these cases, the noise type is totally different from training data. In these cases, performance monitor works well. Okay, thanks. That's it.